This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie shows how the Mahasiddhas of ancient India were ordinary people who attained the highest levels of realization in the midst of everyday life. Their example, he says, reminds us that spiritual transformation can only occur within the exact circumstances of our specific life. This talk is from Buddhist Tantra, an audio course produced by Sounds True.
Many times when we think about spirituality, we think of extraordinary people. Although spirituality is really mostly a matter of practice and study and work on oneself and the various fulfillments that come from that, we also find very compelling people that seem to have accomplished the things that we're working on. In the Buddhist tradition itself, many people are held up as being special or extraordinary in terms of their lives and their achievements. In some traditions, these people are actually talked about as being superhuman. This is a tradition in all developed religions. But here's a point that I want to make very clear. From the viewpoint of the Buddhist Tantra, the people who have achieved realization in this tradition are not extraordinary beings in their origins and in their lives. The whole point of the tradition is that they are ordinary people. Within human culture, it's natural to set certain people up as being special, being above everybody else. And particularly when you have religions that are institutionalized, you have hierarchies and you have people who are given particular deference and so on. But within the Buddhist Tantra, it's very important to realize that everybody is on the same level in terms of being a human being. Everybody is working with the same things. The way I want to make this point is to talk about the people who established the Buddhist Tantra in India. These people are known as Mahasiddhas, or great enlightened ones, or greatly perfected beings. That's the translation of the Sanskrit term Mahasiddha. These were both men and women. And already we see a difference from earlier Buddhist tradition where the great saints and the great realized people were, for the most part, men. And certainly within the tradition itself of the monastic culture, the renowned people, the learned people, the scholars, the great authors were all men. But within the tantric tradition, we see a very different development. Men and women were the founders of the tradition, the practitioners of the tradition in its early days, and the people who became realized. They worked with each other. Sometimes men studied with women teachers. Actually, very often men studied with women teachers. Women often studied with male teachers. Men and women practiced together, practiced meditation together, which was not common within the larger Buddhist arena. And they achieved realization together, and they lived together as compatriots on the path. One of the most important points about the Siddhas, and this is something we need to think about very deeply, is that to a very large extent in Indian society, the Siddhas were marginalized people. At least half of the Siddhas, half of these realized people, these enlightened tantric saints, at least half of them were low caste people, which means that they were occupying the bottom rungs of Indian society. They were poverty-stricken. Their legal rights were minimal. They were despised, in some sense, by the upper castes. They were considered polluting. They were considered to be defiled. They were often beggars and people who cleaned outhouses. So that's one half of the Siddhas. And the other half were people who were of upper caste, but through their tantric practice, they were virtually rendered outcasts. Within the tantric tradition in India, part of the training was that you would go and practice in a cremation ground, which was very defiling. You would often eat meals with people of lower caste, which again, very defiling. You can lose your caste that way. And often the upper caste people would marry people of lower caste, and that's the absolute worst. You know, when you do that, you're finished, and you couldn't even come within a mile of your old village. So the Siddhas are really quite different from the characteristics of the other Buddhist professional people, or you could say the serious professional practitioners, who were often upper caste people and were very respected within society and lived within the monastic institutions virtually as high caste paragons of virtue for the whole culture. The Siddhas were marginalized. They lived outside of the boundaries of conventional society. Now, you might say, why in the world did they do such a thing? Was this just because they couldn't get into the monasteries, or what was going on? The fact is, they intentionally put themselves in the margins between the worlds. They intentionally took up this place outside of conventional society. Why? Because the whole point of Buddhist Tantra is to make some kind of journey to a level of being that underlies the conventional personality, the conventional mask, the conventional persona. We could say that when you live entirely in terms of your concepts of yourselves and your social role in society, you are unable to live a very full life because you're always having to adjust everything that you are. It's like a tree that is trying to grow, and every day the gardener comes in and sees if anything unusual is growing, like a branch, and he just hacks off any branch or anything that is going to be unusual or distinctive. And that's kind of what our situation is like. In order to address that situation, the Siddhas felt in the beginning it's necessary to step out of the rigid lockstep world of the society that they lived in, and therefore they intentionally put themselves in margins outside conventional society. The Siddhas' lives are instructive in terms of the tantric journey, and I thought it would be helpful for us if we look very briefly at their kind of lives that they lived. First, as I mentioned, the Siddhas came largely, or at least half of them came from the lower echelons of society. And when we read their biographies, we see that these people were people in tremendous distress. You think of the distress that people feel living in the inner cities, particularly if you're an ethnic person or African American living in the inner city. And those of us who have not had that experience hear about the violence, and we're hearing more and more about the illness that African American people experience because of their inadequate health care and the stress that the inner city provides to them. We hear about social disruption. We hear about families in crisis in unique ways. We hear about the brutality of the established order, of which the police, in many cases in the inner city, are the custodians. That kind of life is the kind of life that the Siddhas and the lower castes experienced. And reading their biographies, and these biographies survive in Tibetan translation. We have a set of 84 lives of these Siddhas, which were translated into Tibetan probably about 1100, and they're available in translation into English. under the title 84 Siddhas. You can find a couple of different translations. When we read these biographies, we read about people who were working 365 days a year, who had terrible work situations, who worked 7 days a week just to feed themselves and their families. And if they were sick for one day, the family didn't eat for that day. We read about people who, even in terms of that society, were overly stricken with illness, a lot of very ill people. We read about people who are psychologically a complete mess, compulsive liars, compulsive stealers, people who are phobic, people who are beside themselves because they have to live in terrible circumstances. So that's an interesting kind of situation, and in a way, it's emblematic of the human condition as such, in the sense that all of us have things about our lives and things about ourselves that we can't change. And no matter what we do, we can't really solve that one fundamental obstacle or that one fundamental psychological problem, no matter what we do. I mean, of course, we can take so many drugs that we don't know what we're feeling anymore, but we don't really solve that problem. This kind of situation also existed for the upper caste people who were siddhas, who became tantric saints. And these were people who are more akin to what we find in the United States among the, you could say, middle class and upper class, often very well educated, no enormous problems with health or livelihood. They're not starving every day. But people for whom things are not working very well, and there's a lot of psychological distress and disorder among these upper caste people. So what all of these siddhas had in common when they started on their tantric journey was that there was some aspect of life that wasn't working for them. It's kind of like a person who wakes up one day in our culture and realizes that if they keep going, they may become rich, they may develop a tremendous amount of social approbation, of social respect. They may become powerful. They may gain all of the goals that are put forth as being the American dream or the dream of the Western world, and they will have missed the most basic challenge of their life. Now, mind you, most people don't realize that, admittedly. Most people think everything's fine, and if they just keep going, that someday they're going to be happy. But there is a minority of people in our culture who aren't so sure. They take a look at their lives and they take a look at what is being offered, and they're not so sure. In fact, they begin to suspect that they could accomplish everything that is set out and wind up at the end of their life empty-handed. This is the feature that characterizes all of these siddhas. The siddhas lived between the 8th and 12th century in North India and in the South. And so they lived a long time ago and a long way away. But their problem, strangely enough, is our problem. It's the same fear of missing out on one's life and of failing to develop whatever it is in us that is calling out desperately to be developed. Whatever it is in us that needs to be experienced. Many of us are terrified that we could spend a life and have a tremendously successful life and at the end of our life realize that it was all empty and meaningless. What was the response of the siddhas to this kind of personal existential crisis? Because of their culture, largely, they looked in a spiritual direction. They began to wonder if finding some kind of answer outside of the framework of conventional society might not be a solution to their problem. And so these folks went out searching. Now, they had one advantage over us. Within their culture, there were renowned teachers around. There were monasteries that they could go to. They could apply for admission to a monastery and enter. There were nunneries, if they were women. They could study. They could be supported, in some sense. And then there were masters in these monasteries that they could study with, you know, very renowned scholars and very renowned dialecticians and theologians and so on. Many people took this option. But the siddhas, because of the radical nature of their awareness of the imperfection of their lives, and I think really because of their intelligence, they realized that their lives' fundamental existential issues were not going to be solved by knowing a lot of things or being a respectable monastic person. And so they set off looking for another kind of master who were meditators living in the jungles, far away from population centers, practicing, meditating, and finding out all of the things you find out when you meditate in a serious way.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.